You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. From him, we go to Mike Musselman. Standing
Why
by.
Why don't you let me talk to Woody?
Do you know Woody?
Yes.
I didn't know you knew Woody. How do you know Woody?
Our paths crossed while we were Marines, of course.
Do you want to talk to him?
No, he can. He's got work to do. I didn't know he's the. Congratulations to his job as the editor of.
Editor and publisher of the Marine Corps Gazette and publisher of Leatherneck Magazine.
Boom. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like you really.
Woody knows Gunnar Musselman, and Gunnar Musselman knows Woody.
From where?
I mean, running around all the time. What is he now, Colonel?
He's out. He's retired.
Oh. Okay. Last time I talked to him, I think he was Lieutenant Colonel.
Yeah, he got out as a Colonel.
Yeah, I know he got picked up, but he was in Quantico the same time I was at Quantico.
You didn't do too much Quantico time though, right?
But I knew everybody. You know me, Mac. I get around everybody. I don't take long to start knowing people. Hell, I've been in Granbury for 2 years, and I know more people than people that do through their whole life.
What are the odds you become mayor of Granbury, Texas? They're good, aren't they?
You're such a good guy.
Yeah. What if I come mayor?
Yeah, I'm betting.
What if I come mayor?
Yeah. What if you? What are the odds that you become mayor? I think they're good, man.
I wouldn't become mayor. No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't want the mayor's job.
You wouldn't? Why not?
Well, I don't know if he gets his own parking place.
I know, but Mike, when you're the mayor, guess what? You can decide.
You got to ride in a float. I don't want to ride in a float.
Why not? You'd be up. Have you ever ridden on a float? You've ridden on a float.
Yeah, I was actually Grand Marshal of the float of the 4th of July parade in Lake Tahoe when I was a Marine recruiter up there. The mayor of Tahoe, we were good buddies, and he made me the Grand Marshal. If I ridden a float. I was the Grand Marshal of the float, Mac.
You... I was the Grand Marshal of the St. Patrick's Day Parade in Grand Forks, North Dakota. And, I got my kids on were on the float. I got like these robes, like the Pope. And I made
right.
a hat. I made like the Pope hat, that kind of pyramid thing, that the Pope had.
Right.
And I spray painted it green. And then I got a hockey stick and I cut the blade off and I got a ball at a craft store, and I spray painted it all gold to look like something the Pope would have. And I kind of did my Guido,
like a scepter. Yeah.
Like a scepter. I kind of did my Guido Sarducci impersonation, where I'm on this float and we're playing Irish music. And I don't even like being Irish, to be honest with you, but I figured I'd do it. And playing that song, McNamara's Band.
Guido Sarducci was Italian, by the way.
I know. So I'm doing my Guido Sarducci, like, with my thumb and my four fingers together, like, you know how he used to do that? So I'm doing I'm waving.
That's
I tried not to bless people because I thought that'd be a little bit much, but I might have done it a few times. But I enjoyed being the Grand Marshal of a parade. But, yeah, if you're mayor, you could be the Grand Marshal. You can have your own parking spot.
Yeah.
You could do all that because you're the – guess what? You're the mayor.
That's true. Hey, ask me what I did today.
What'd you do today?
Well, so sitting next to me right now is the one and only Mr. Ralph Kiss of Granbury, Texas. He's the one I was telling stories about, was an air traffic controller in the Air Force, got out, became air traffic controller. And these are the days of before radar. This is visual sight for air traffic control stuff, so the hard stuff, not computers doing it for you. Right?
Now, did he go on strike? Did he get fired by Reagan?
You know, I never asked him that. Did you ever get fired by Reagan during that strike?
I did the firing.
Ooh. He did. Oh, Ralph did the firing.
He fired 242 guys.
242 people lost their jobs. Man, I didn't know that you studied, Ralph.
What a
jackass. Here, hang on a second, Mac.
What a jackass. Hello? What just happened? Gunner, man, he's killing me. at some point, hopefully he'll find out what an idiot he is, and then somehow or other he shut his...
Oh, there we go.
What are you doing, man?
All right, that's not working.
What'd you try to do?
I was trying to put it through my car. It stopped everything.
Are you having phone issues?
I mean, I don't know what's going on with my phone.
Oh my God.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, so we're talking about Ralph, who fired.
Yeah, he's right next to me. Interview.
So what happened to, did all those two, did they hire any of the 242 back ultimately?
None of the ones that I fired.
Wow. So how do you replace 242 people?
Slowly.
Very, very slowly. He's right.
So did you just move your, bed into the air traffic control tower?
Almost. I work 16 hours a day, 7 days a week.
For how long?
A year.
Wow. That, you know, a lot of people don't remember that. That was over a long labor dispute, and they went out on strike, right? And then he fired them.
Right.
Nice. So did you find mostly guys?
They went out on strike, and the post office had 500,000 employees, and they were ready to go, too. And when Reagan shut the controllers down, the post office tucked their tail in and forgot about it.
Yeah, you know, and that's a good thing, because you don't need the postal workers angrier than they normally are. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, of course, what we had is every one of us that was employed by the FAA, we had to sign a piece of paper and swear that we would never strike against the government.
Whoa. I know.
We had them.
Wow. So let me ask you this. Do we need humans to make airplanes move around? What do we need humans for?
Well, eventually, probably we won't need them.
Really?
That's scary.
But the problem is that the machine sometimes can't think fast enough. If you got two aircraft that are suddenly, one guy has diverted from what he was supposed to do,
right,
and now they're in a collision, they can't think fast enough to correct it.
Right.
The human is still faster.
Interesting. So, Ralph, so are you still working as an air traffic controller, or you retired?
I retired.
So, how'd you meet Mike?
I don't know. We were out shooting together, weren't we?
Yeah.
Now, how many... Are you a gun guy, Ralph? What kind of gun guy are you?
Hey, Mac, Hey, list what guns you don't own, Ralph.
I've got five safes and they're full.
So would you classify yourself as a collector, or are you just a guy who likes to shoot?
How about both?
Are you both? Okay. And you've gone shooting with Mike?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
What do you think of his shooting skills? Tell the truth.
Well, I'm not even in the same league as he is.
Okay, I'm gonna ask you that again, Ralph, and I want you to think hard about your answer. What do you think of, because I can edit this, what do you think of Mike's shooting skills, Ralph?
They can improve, right?
No, just say they suck. He couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat, okay? That's what we're looking for. Okay, Ralph. So, Ralph, great to have you on All Marine Radio. What do you think of the gunner's shooting skills?
Now, if you let me have a rifle with a scope on it, I can hit anything in one shot.
There you go. All right. Ralph, you're killing me. Absolutely killing me. Now, let me ask you this. What do you think about his personality? He's kind of a lot for people to, when they first meet him. Yes or no?
I've liked him from the get-go.
Oh, my God. Ralph, do you ever want to come? Do you ever want to come back on All Marine Radio? What the hell? And I know you're an Air Force guy. You're easily impressed. I got it. All right. So, is there any guns that Mike has that you don't have?
Oh yeah.
There is.
Yep. Ralph has that I don't have.
Yep.
Yeah, like
no.
499.
No, the other way around. Is there any guns that the gunner has, or are there any toys that the gunner has relative to guns that you don't have, Ralph? Because you sound like you have everything.
I have a little bit of everything. Yeah.
So whenever gunners bring something up, you say, "Yeah, I got that."
Yeah, I got one of those.
I got two. I got two of those.
Yeah.
What's the coolest gun Ralph has, Mike?
Oh, he's got a lot of the original Winchester stuff from back in the days of fighting Indians.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've got a pretty good Winchester collection.
Wow. So the oldest firearm you own, Ralph, would be what?
Let
me go look at the record.
Around 1800, I think.
Wow, what is it? 1800 what?
Well, I've got an 1895 lever action odd six.
Whoa. You still shoot it?
Yeah, it's still shootable, yes.
I love that. I love
it.
It belonged
to a Texas ranger and belonged to my grandfather and my dad, and now I own.
Wow. I had a question for you about shooting and Mike. My guest this morning is the gunner, and he's joined by his friend Ralph. You didn't tell me what you were doing this morning.
Well, and that's what we just got done. Ralph's bunch of trees fell because of that big storm that hit us. So David, Biff, and I were out there cleaning it all up. And then that's what I was going to tell you. Hey, we're going to have to cut this one short, but we can bring Ralph back and then sit down and do this because we're in the truck and we got to meet these guys for lunch right now.
What? Oh, so you got to cut me off for lunch?
Yeah.
Okay, listen, Fatso, that's not happening, okay? The last time, remember, you all had a little bit of a meltdown, like, hey, everybody says I look fat. Do I look fat? Tina, do I look fat? Okay, back away from Chow Mike. Hey, Ralph. Hey Ralph, do you know that Mike's not really from
the Air Force, but I never questioned a Marine.
Okay, Ralph, that's a bunch of bullshit. Okay, we sell that to everybody. Do not believe it because it's a bunch of con men and shysters that joined the Marine Corps. Now,
I don't think you heard. No, I'll drop the offer.
do you know Mike?
And then I'll just park it back there.
Yeah. Does Ralph know that you're not really from Texas?
Yeah, Ralph knows I'm not from Texas, but that doesn't matter.
Yeah,
I live here now. I'm not from Texas either. And Ralph's not from Texas either.
Where's Ralph from?
From Montana.
Is he?
Wow. Yeah.
How'd he get to Texas? Air Force?
Probably a car.
Oh, that's...
Like everybody else?
That's the way we're going to do it?
No, I'm just messing with you.
All right. So you're going to lunch?
Lunch up.
Yeah.
All right.
Then, let's find it because get down and sit one day and just open up the questions for Ralph.
All right. Well, your phone
collected more elk than most people too.
Make sure your phone works, and then we can do that.
Yeah, I will.
All right. Enjoy lunch.
Yeah. All right, buddy.
All right.
I'll talk
you
later.
That is the gunner. This is the gunner and Ralph here on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio. What the hell, man? The gunner and Ralph. That is amazing. All right, we're going to take a quick break. I've got a few emails to get to. Let me do one right before we go. Mac, I've been listening to this show for a while. I had no idea that you had that kind of background relative to decision making. I'm intrigued. Can you talk about it? Yeah, I used to walk behind lieutenants at the basic school, and you'd hear butter, butter, jam, pop, 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 and they would just go, oh, what do I do? What do I do? And he tried to teach him, and it was just, it got into my head, like, why do we have such a hard time? You know, it's told, what do we teach him relative to making a decision? And you know what the answer is? Nothing. We teach him how to write an order. Okay. We teach him the one-third rule, which nobody ever adheres to. And then we take him out in the field and we tell him to do it. And then I thought, you know what? They make decisions. Those, especially guys who are athletes, right? If you're a football player, if you're a hockey player, a basketball player, a baseball player, you make reads all the time. Soccer player. You make reads all the time and you react to them. And that's what you got to do on the battlefield. And so it got in my head, like, well, why can't they do this? And so, you know, so I really thought, well, we should teach him about decision making. There's a thought. So I'll tell you what, let me take a break. We'll come back and I'll just give you the background. And it's kind of funny because the guys that have been on the program the last couple of weeks, I started teaching a class at the infantry officer course. After I taught it, Kennedy taught it. After Kennedy taught it, Furness taught it. And so it's interesting because we all very interested in that component of it. And so I'll tell you a little bit about it, how it evolved as we continue here. This hour of All Marine Radio brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the one and only Battle Mug. Battle Mug mug starts as a 10-pound block of aluminum. It's milled, machined, and anodized, and then it's ready for you to make your own. Picatinny rails on the side, so anything that goes on your rifle or pistol that you have on rails can go on your mug. So if you take it to the field, it's got an M16 carrying handle on it. That's right. That used to be on the M16 and M4 before we did other things. And so it looks really cool. You can have the bottom engraved, name, unit, rank, right, unit emblem, all that kind of stuff can go underneath it on the bottom. And then on the rails, if you go to the field, scope, light, laser. If you're in the office, emblems, flags, all kinds of stuff that you can get off their website. So check it out, battlemug.com. It's great for any commemorative event, farewell, promotion, retirement, and any other special occasion. So battlemug.com is the website. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. It's a Marine-originated, veteran-owned and operated company. The product made entirely in the United States of America. So we're going to talk decision-making when I come back. Yeah, as you can tell, I enjoy it. Another one. Hey, Mac, way to go off on Woodbridge. He was getting ready to go to lunch when you screwed him up with your decision-making thing. Hey, he brought it up. If you can't tell, anytime he's ever brought that up, I kind of jump on it. Anyway, more of All Marine Radio coming up next on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Tracy Lawrence in studio today. What's up?
But the flame turned to embers, left glowing in the dark. I've got it through my head. I just can't break into my heart.
All right. I'll tell you the story about this decision making class. So I have this in my head, and I wanted to do it, and then I get told I'm going to go teach it at IOC, which is a big deal, and I'm really excited about that. So I get to IOC, General Kelly's there, and I'm kind of a new guy, so I'm there for a few months. I said, "Hey, sir, I've got an idea for a class I'd like to run by." And so he's leaving in a month, and I sit down and I tell him. He goes, "Yeah, you know, I think we do a pretty good job of that, Mac." So he said, "But you know, I like the idea, but I think we're okay." All right. So he left. Major John Allen shows up. So I said, "Hey, sir, can I roll an idea in front of you?" "Yeah." And so he looks at me. He goes, "I love the idea. Get the class ready. We'll murder board it, and we'll do it." He said, "Well, it'll be the first class they get." And I was like, "Whoa." So that's what we did. And there's a form of it that's still given today. So let me tell you what the class is. What I saw was lieutenants who, they were worried about making wrong decisions and they were confused. And so my thought was, okay, you got to get them used to this is what they contribute, all right? If you just need to move a unit around a battlefield, I mean, a staff sergeant can do that, all right? What we want our lieutenants to do and what we want our lieutenants to teach is the art of decision-making. That is what the leader does. He makes decisions. Other people can implement those decisions. A leader decides. And we have leaders at all units, at all echelons, and they all make little decisions. Okay, so how does it all work together? So, the billboard for the class has a picture of a guy named Strong Vincent on it. Okay, now most people have never heard of him. If I ask you who the hero of Little Round Top, you'll tell me Joshua Chamberlain. And I will tell you Joshua Chamberlain was the rhetoric professor that happened to be in the back of the column of regiments in Vincent's brigade. Okay? So the second day of Gettysburg is going on in front of him. He's on the back side of, like, the wheat field. And so Vincent's there, and the battle's going, and they know they're going to get plugged in somewhere, and he sees a courier riding around looking for his division commander. And he yells at the courier, flags him down, and he says, "Who's the message for?" He said, it's for General Barnes, sir. And Vincent says, "Let me see it." He says, "Sir, I can't show it to you." And Vincent says, "Give it to me. I'll take responsibility for this." So he reads the message, and the communique is from the chief engineer who's up on Little Round Top, a guy named Governor Warren. I want to say he's a major general at the time, and he sends a message to the division commander, "Get somebody up here now." So Vincent flags the courier down. He reads the message, hands it back to the courier, and he says, "Tell General Barnes I'm en route now." With that, he gives his brigade the order to move. He takes his guidon bearer, his flag bearer, and they head up to Little Round Top. They get up to Little Round Top, they look over, and here on the other side, down at the base of the hill, is McClaw's, Hood, and Longstreet's guys extending around Little Round Top, getting ready to roll the Union left flank. All right, so whatever direction you're facing, stick your arms out. Okay, the palm of your left hand is Little Round Top. The Union isn't close to where your palm is. Okay, they're behind your left palm. The Confederates are moving beyond the palm of your left hand and getting ready to roll up your left arm. Vincent takes his guys up there, and as the Confederates are on their way up the hill, they have a meeting engagement on the top of the Hill. There's a guy named Patrick O'Rourke. He's a West Point guy. I want to say he's less than 25 years of age. He's a lieutenant colonel. He's in the lead. The rhetoric professor from Bowdoin, Joshua Chamberlain, he's in the back. Okay, now, for those of us who've been in charge, who do you put in the back? He's that guy. Okay, he's got a droopy mustache. He's a rhetoric professor, so Chamberlain's in the back. O'Rourke gets shot and killed. What happens is his regiment comes over the top of the hill. I want to say it's like the 44th New York or something like that. As I said, he's a West Point guy. He gets shot and killed, right? He orders a charge from a column of fours. They don't even deploy for combat. He sees them coming up the hill, and he just yells, sound the charge, and he gets killed. And then Vincent extends the Union left flank around Little Round Top. Vincent's mortally wounded. He gets shot through the groin and I want to say in the chest. He bleeds to death over the course of the next 24 hours. And so use initiative, make a decision, evolve the decision, make a decision, evolve the decision. All right. So you see all of that in that little battle. So I dedicated the class to Strong Vincent, and you can look him up. And then the more I read, the more things I found out. And as I put the class together, you know, there's three things a decision maker has to do in combat, right? Hans von Sieg said, you can find a lot of great German quotes, to be honest with you. But Hans von Sieg says, the essential thing is action. Action has three stages. The decision born of thought, the order or preparation for execution, and then the execution itself. You got to be able to do all three. You can't spend a ton of time on the order and leave no time for preparation and execution. Okay? You got to be able to make a decision. You got to be able to issue an order, and then you got to be able to execute all three. Now, I talked about the whole bias for action thing with Russell Solfe. Let me read it. Quote, the unique history and circumstances of the Germans made it necessary for them to excel in war. They grasped the essence of war, chaos, violence, uncertainty, chance, and danger. They determined in a long process of more than two centuries to meet uncertainty with action. Rommel's genius was action. This genius for action was built into the structure of the 7th Panzer Division through the small action-oriented staff and a similarly oriented subordinate commanders. He goes on. The 7th in Russia, the 7th Panzer Division advanced without Rommel even more efficiently than it had in 1940 in France. The Russian experience tells us that the genius of the division went far beyond one man. The great advances of the 7th Panzer Division in Russia were based on self-confidence and initiative among commanders, staff, rank and file, qualities that focused on rapid action in war. The senior commanders of the 7th Panzer Division allowed subordinate leaders to make mistakes. The tolerance of these leaders was never an excuse for slipshod performance. It was a calm recognition that rapid action in the face of uncertainty will result in errors. Errors that can be overcome by more action. Okay, so you read this stuff and I'm just like, wow, are we teaching this? Are we setting up our junior leaders, right, to do this well? And the answer to that was, no, we really didn't even talk about it at the time. So this class is born out of that. And remember that. The essential thing is action. Okay? Got to make a decision. You got to communicate an order, and you got to execute it, and then you got to evolve it. And then you talk about the environment, right? Battlefield dynamics, friction and uncertainty. You talk about that. And then you talk about time. And you talk about, you know, I used to throw up a tic-tac-toe thing, right? And you put up a little pattern up there, and you say, what's X's next move? Well, by looking at the pattern, you see it immediately, right? And why do you know it? Because you played tic-tac-toe a million times. It's called recognition prime decision-making, right? So those are immediate action drills. What you see in front of you, you react to, it's familiar, blah, 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 blah. So that's what one end of the spectrum. On the other end is deliberate decision making. And I throw up the MAGTAF amphibious planning process, right? And there's like 60 boxes. You throw it up and everybody goes, ugh. And you say, no, look, this is what won World War II. That was good, yes? Winning is good. So don't groan, right? This is what moved man, material, and won an incredibly decisive victory in the Pacific. What determines which one you use? And that is time. That is time. Analytical decision making, right, is a great tool when you have time. So we live on, and then trying to teach them about this, the spectrum that you live on, right? We live in the world of execution, right? Combat orders, techniques, and decision making have to line up to maximize execution. Okay? When you have time, you can be more deliberate. Your order can be more elaborate. And you still give your subordinates the amount of time that they need to take a look at that, to rehearse, and be ready. So you put them in the best opportunity for success. Okay? What's clearly inappropriate that all of us have lived through is what? You know, he takes too long to make a decision because he doesn't want to screw it up, right? And then he writes this crazy order, and then we get it about an hour before we have to step off. I don't even have time to get it all to my Marines before we go, right? And if we're cognizant of that, we can be better at it. And then that just talks about it, right? That's how it works. So then how do you do it? How do you do it? And I stole this from General Zinni, but he talked about this. Can I operate with a changed situation, a mission that may, parts of it may be now irrelevant, and no communication? That is the function of commander's intent. So, friction, uncertainty, bad comm. Can I still be effective on the battlefield? The answer is yes. The answer is yes. If you know what your tactical mission is, destroy, neutralize, killer capture, block, seize, all those tactical missions, right? If you know those words and you know what they mean, and you have branch plans with you, you have a sense of what he wants done, even if everything else changes. And so then it's, okay, how do you put this into real world to create that bias for action? The most important thing is, go back to the 7th Panzer Division, is you got to understand that they're going to make mistakes. And as long as they overcome those mistakes, right, unscrew yourself. Unscrew yourself. Then what you're going to unleash is a young professional that wants to be good. Okay, now, does that mean he does anything he wants to? No, and that's part of the education. The concept of coordinated initiative. Is, and let me tell you what, dead is dead, right? There's a reason why when we train with blanks and you hear butta butta jam, pop, 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 you see the uncoordinated flanking attack that spontaneously breaks out, okay? If you put one live round in somebody's ammunition and before you step off you say, hey, look, there's a live round in somebody's ammunition. I'm not really sure who's got it. But I know there's one in, you know, in the aggressors, and there's one, you know, in ours. So be careful. You would see no spontaneous flanking attack because nobody would move because they don't want to get whacked. And so my point used to be uncoordinated initiative gets people killed. You know, that's how friendly fire incidents happen. Right. So if you think the battlefield's any other way, then you've never seen it. So you got to coordinate what you do, especially when you go off the script. So it's a more mature understanding of how we do it. And I don't care if you're talking about a convoy. I don't care if you're talking about route clearance. I don't care if you're talking about a combat operations center. When you go off the script, the first thing you do is you got to tell somebody so that everybody can make the appropriate adjustments so that you stay synced up. So that stuff's important. And then the way you critique it was tremendously important, right? And so you have whoever is in charge, they stand up, they give their estimate of the situation. And really what you want them to talk about is from the enemy's perspective. What did I think based on what I knew? What did I think the enemy was doing out here? And how would I see it? And then based from that situation, he can tell you, hey, I think he's doing this, and I believe we will see the followings. And then you make him do things like talk about the enemy center of gravity, talk about the vulnerabilities that he believes he's going to be able to use. Okay? All that is designed to reinforce this discussion about maneuver warfare and trying to exploit their vulnerabilities. And then ultimately creating a dilemma for the bad guys. Not easy. Not easy. And so you let them do that. And then you let people ask questions. And this comes from the Kriegs Academy, the German military academy from like the 1930s. They evaluated people on four criteria. One, logical combat thinking. Good tactical judgment. Three, timely and aggressive application of principles. And four, seizing and maintaining the initiative. Continuing to push him and not allowing him the time to recover, to come back. And then the last thing I would tell them is, look, if you do these things consistently over time, they will grow beyond your wildest expectation. Okay? They will grow. And if you can make it competitive, if you can make it fun, they will grow. It will blow your mind in terms of if you build it, they will come. Leaders at all echelons have to do it. They have to see you doing it, okay? They've got to see you lose. They've got to see you win. And therefore, it enables them to do it. And so 2nd Battalion, 6th Marines doing it now. We'll get them on the hook, and we'll find out how they're doing it and what they'd recommend to you. So awesome. I love it. And again, it's not a combat arms kind of a thing. It you can do it with supporting arms. You could do it with social situation. How do you navigate this? What's important? What's not important? All right? How do you get through this? What do you do as a leader? So those kind of little games lend themselves to all kinds of different manifestations. Well, interesting stuff. And I'll tell you, as you can tell, I love the whole discussion of decision making, because I do. It's the essence of what leaders do. As a leader, what do you contribute? I make decisions. I have people that can execute them, but I make them. And my job, my moral responsibility, is to prepare them to make decisions as well. And they've got to make them in time. They've got to be synced up. And they've got to be aggressive. And they can't be afraid. And guess what? We shouldn't be afraid. There's no organization that gets better human capital than the Marine Corps. It doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. So push them to be better. Push them to be faster. Push them to be, and I'll tell you what, and they love it too. When you make Marines compete and they know they're going to talk shit in the chow hall, just get out of the way. Yeah. Decision making. Again, you can tell. I love it. And I've watched a lot of it too. Some people can do it. Some people can't. Everybody can get better at it, though. My thanks this morning, in order of appearance, Bob Nielsen. You'll hear more about that initiative with Turner Construction, 100 Entrepreneurs, and All Marine Radio, looking for approximately 40 to 50 people that are looking for careers. So you'll hear more about that. So if you know somebody that's looking for a career, and they've been, his preference is that they've been to Iraq or Afghanistan, operated in that environment. If they're looking for a career, and again, in construction, they don't need to be, it's really in management and leadership. If they're looking to be with a great company, Turner, and they have that kind of background, then tell them to get a hold of us. So they can get a hold of me here at All Marine Radio, and I'll put them in touch with Nielsen. So, help us spread the word. And again, we're looking for guys, and even if they have issues, you know, we know people that can help people. Yeah, our friends at places like Boulder Crest, are all about helping people live better lives. So, fired up for that. So my thanks to Bob Nielsen for coming on, joining me, getting me fired up about decision-making is Chris Woodbridge, retired Marine colonel, the editor and publisher of the Marine Corps Gazette, the publisher of Leatherneck magazine. So, him and then the gunner. And Ralph. Yeah. Ralph. We're going to talk a little cooking tomorrow. Thanks for listening. This program repeats itself momentarily if you missed the first part of it. If you missed the first part of it, the conversation with Bob Nielsen, don't go away. You'll hear that coming up next. If you did not hear yesterday's conversation with Major General Paul Kennedy, Commanding General Marine Corps Recruiting Command, I would tell you, by all means, listen to that. It's a great conversation. And it gives you, again, Kate Germano's criticism to me resonates with me. You know, OCS model better. And he talks about that. He talks about that. And he talks about the whole pipeline from becoming a poolee till they graduate from MCT and go to MOS schools, which is the pipeline that he said that we consider. So interesting stuff as we continue this discussion about the culture of the Marine Corps, how it gets created, how it can be made better, and where it needs to go. The bottom line, though, is this. The time for classes is over. And people need to be held accountable. If you don't want to act, I'll quote Lieutenant General Milstead, right? You ride for the man, you wear his brand. You're going to be a Marine, then you're a Marine. On a Thursday, have a great one. Yeah, just send an email to mac.allmarineradio@gmail.com. I just got an email asking me that. Have a great one. On a Thursday, All Marine Radio, out.